With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Wednesday, October 11th. Coming up in today's show, the Citrus Research Board conference is today. We'll tell you what to expect. But first, California's most famous wine country is engulfed in flames as residents lose their homes and belongings and some even their lives, and businesses burn to the ground in Napa and Sonoma counties. The long-term impact on the Northern California wine industry could take a long while to assess. There are more than 100,000 acres of wine grapes in Napa and Sonoma counties. Many have just been harvested this time of year, but there are still some varieties on the vine. In addition, the Wine Institute says there are more than 650 wineries in the area, and many of those rely on winery visits and agritourism for a large part of their sales. Some have already burned to the ground, and many others lie in the fire's path. The wine industry around the state creates more than $55 billion in economic activity in California each year. There are many devastating aspects to these ferocious fires. We at AgNet West will continue watching and reporting on the agricultural side for you. Negotiations on the North American Free Trade Agreement continue Wednesday, with some speculating agricultural issues to finally emerge in the talks. However, while negotiators will be in Washington, D.C., the U.S. Chamber of Commerce will lead a delegation of U.S. CEOs to Mexico City. Bloomberg reports that the U.S. business leaders will meet with counterparts from Mexico's private sector and allies in government to discuss ways to defend NAFTA. More than 100 businesses and government officials attended the U.S.-Mexico CEO dialogue in December, shortly after Donald Trump's election. That was the last time the event was held in Mexico. Trump calls NAFTA a disaster, and his administration is leading the renegotiation effort between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce recently said it opposes key proposals by the Trump administration. Specifically, companies are unnerved by U.S. proposals to add a 5-year termination clause and roll back the access of Canadian and Mexican firms to U.S. procurement contracts. A major revolution in the business of farming may be on the way. Gary Crawford presents some views on the future of farmers and farming.
In the next 10 to 20 years, will our farmers be much the same as they are now, doing much the same thing as they're doing now and doing it in the same way?
Well, I think what we're looking at now is a fundamental change in what that person's going to look like.
Moving to armchair farming, we're going to be making our decisions sitting in front of the computer.
Farmers have to be much smarter.
And willing to work in an interdependent system rather than being independent and be very...
Opinions there from four experts in a video panel that the Alltech company put on the other day. All of them said rapid current advances in biological science, access to huge amounts of data, new farming technologies, and increasing consumer say in what our farmers do and how they do it could change the nature of our farmers. And Purdue University economist Dr. Michael Bolgi says it may shift farmers and farming...
from growing stuff to biological manufacturing.
Which made one panel member wince.
Biological manufacturing. That's a terrible term.
Mary Shelman is a Kentucky farm owner, former director of the Harvard Business School's agribusiness program.
Consumers now don't want their food manufactured in any kind of factory.
And Dr. Bolgi says he agrees.
I'm not going to get in front of a group of consumers and try to promote this as a way to think, but certainly it's a way we in the industry at the production level increasingly have to have a mental mindset, because it allows us to facilitate the process of growing and producing food much more scientifically and much better than we have in the past.
He says farmers increasingly will need to know much more about biology of plants and animals and how to use the new sciences to produce the different products that consumers want, because...
we have consumers increasingly telling the entire chain what we want, how we want it, and how it ought to be done.
Which he says will mean farmers are going to have to be on top of this, analyzing markets, using science, working with customers. He says agriculture as a whole right now is still in the mode of...
if I produce it, they will come. That is not the industry of tomorrow.
And Aidan Connolly with Alltech's Innovation Office says tomorrow's farmers are likely to be a lot different from today.
They won't necessarily grow up on a farm. They might grow up in the city. They won't necessarily have the skills of maybe understanding animals or understanding plants. They'll understand data, they'll understand analytics, they'll understand equipment, they'll understand decision-making between all the various technologies and what the person should buy and what they shouldn't invest in.
Or as Alltech's Chief Scientific Officer Dr. Carl Dawson put it,
it's not your daddy's farm anymore.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
A pest update for the avocado industry. Brian German has more.
The recent Avocado Pest Management Roundtable provided growers with some updates on what's happening in the industry. There were approximately 64 growers, PCAs, and other stakeholders who attended the roundtable session. One of the participants in the panel discussion was subtropical horticulturalist at UC Riverside, Mary Lou Arpaia. She noted some of the major topics that were covered during the event.
We talked about mulch as a general management tool for avocados because avocados are shallow rooted and benefit greatly from having mulch around young trees. They talked a lot about the shot hole borer and what it really means to the avocado industry. There was some discussion by the fact that there's so many other things for this beetle to go after that avocados is not a preferred host. So in that sense, we're a little bit lucky for avocados. We're not lucky for some of these native plants of California that are being really gone after by this beetle.
I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. Here's Taylor Hillman.
Citrus growers from all over the state will gather in the Central Valley today for the California Citrus Conference. The conference is put on by the Citrus Research Board, who revived the event last year and is planning on a big event this year. The conference highlights all of the research that the CRB helps fund and brings experts to talk about current challenges in the industry. Today's topics will, of course, revolve heavily around Asian citrus psyllid control and the deadly tree disease that the pest carries called huanglongbing. Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Program Chair Nick Hill will give attendees an update on the recent 33 new HLB fines in Southern California that now brings the state total to just under 200. California Secretary of Agriculture Karen Ross will also be on hand, and she'll address the crowd today with a special message to the industry. Other topics will include HLB detection challenges, updates on biological ACP control programs, and citrus breeding programs looking at new varieties. The California Citrus Conference is at the Wyndham Hotel in Visalia. The event is free and sessions begin at 9 a.m. Pre-registration is closed, but there will be some limited registration at the door. Stay with Agnet West and this radio station for all of the news from the conference. I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
Across the board, there were fewer oranges, grapefruits, and other citrus fruits grown in the past season, and that continues to impact prices. Rod Bain reports.
Final numbers for the U.S. citrus crop for 2016-17 reveal
estimate for all citrus production was down to 7.8 million tons, which represents an 11% decline from last year.
And USDA economist Gustavo Ferreira says the year-over-year production decline covered all categories except
tangerines and mandarins was the only crop that experienced an increase this year.
Oranges, for both fresh consumption and processing for orange juice, make up two-thirds of the U.S. citrus crop. And for this past season, total production came in at over 5.1 million tons,
which translates into a 50% decline compared to last season.
Production declines were reported in the three major orange-growing states, California, Florida, and Texas.
By commodity, U.S. navel production saw a decline of 13% this year, whereas U.S. Valencia oranges, a crop, was 18% smaller than last season. So the largest reductions in production in orange happened in Valencia, which happens to be also in Florida for the most part.
Turning to other citrus crops, Ferreira says despite a year-over-year increase in California grapefruit production,
grapefruit also shrunk by 15% and slipped down to 682,000 tons this year
due to another year of lower production and a short season overall in Florida. As for lemons,
lemon production only suffers relatively a small decline of 2%, with some losses in one state and gains in other states.
Ferreira says although production totals for all citrus were down year over year,
the crop value was relatively unchanged due to changes and some increases in prices.
The crop value for this season estimated at $3.4 billion with a B dollars. One example of this lower production, higher price correlation is in navel oranges.
This has been seen in higher prices in the fresh market at the retail level.
And grapefruit prices on average rose 12% from the previous season. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, U.S. beef exports posted another outstanding performance in August, remaining well above last year's pace, according to statistics released by USDA and compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Joe Sheely has the story.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, trade analyst Jessica Spreitzer has highlights from the August red meat export results just released by USDA. Japan stood out again on the beef side, despite the recent triggering of a higher tariff rate on imports of frozen U.S. beef.
We had great news out of Japan. This was actually the highest volume of U.S. beef exports to Japan in the post-BSE era. And we saw increases over last year for both frozen and chilled beef, even though August was the first month that the U.S. faced a higher tariff due to the safeguard in Japan for frozen beef. So tariffs actually increased from 38.5% to 50% for U.S. beef. But we still saw strong demand in this August data. And so over the next few months, we'll continue to monitor to see how that affects the situation, but still good demand in Japan in August. We also have seen rebounding volumes to Hong Kong starting the middle part of this year, and we saw that growth continue in August.
Pork exports to Mexico continue to shine, and there was also improvement in exports to China-Hong Kong, which had been down sharply the previous month.
We continue to be on a record pace, which would be a sixth consecutive volume record year for Mexico this year, and that trend continued in August with stronger exports again over last year. Mexico is an extremely important market for U.S. ham exports, so it's very important that the pace of Mexico stays strong, especially with the slower demand in China this year as their production is rebounding. We're really seeing that strong buying out of Mexico continuing for U.S. hams. We actually saw a little bit of a rebound in exports to China, Hong Kong in August. To China, we saw a little bit of an improvement from the volumes this summer. And Hong Kong's volumes were actually up 8% from last year. So we're seeing an improvement there and also very strong exports still to both China and Hong Kong for pork variety meats.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And according to USMEF, August beef exports at 112,000 metric tons was up 5% from a year ago. That's the largest in 2017. Export value was the second highest on record at $679.1 million. That's up 20% from a year ago and trailing only the record high value that was reached back in October of 2014. For January through August, beef exports increased 10% in volume and 16% in value compared to the first 8 months of last year. Meanwhile, pork exports at 183,600 metric tons in August was down 2% year over year, valued at $511.4 million. January through August volume remained 9% above last year's record pace, while export value increased 11% to $4.2 billion. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Evergreiner is next.
Now, we all know about that dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Dead zone means nothing can live there, plant nor animal. It has long been blamed on agriculture. What I've been told is runoff from fields along the Mississippi River created this dead zone. Well, now there's another villain involved. I just learned that pollutants and toxins associated with meat processing is what is depriving that area of the oxygen necessary to sustain life. So, what about the fertilizers, pesticides, and insecticides from those crops, which borders the Mississippi, Missouri, and the Ohio rivers? Most of us thought that was what an area bigger than the state of New Jersey is unable to sustain anything that lives. And how vital is this to the average American? Well, at least it's something to think about. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Reiner, AgNet West.
Jamie Johansson has today's interview segment special from Brussels. Here's Jamie.
We are at the 2017 Youth Ag Summit in Brussels, Belgium, and I'm sitting here with the man behind the idea. Go ahead, Derek, introduce yourself and tell us what you do with Bayer, and give us the beginning thoughts of what this Youth Ag Summit started back in 2013.
Great, thank you. So I'm Derek Rusdiba. I'm Vice President of Communications for Bayer Canada. Previous to that, I was head of marketing and corporate communications for Crop Science. So going back to 2013, it was the anniversary, 150th anniversary for Bayer. It was also 4-H Canada's 100th anniversary. So it was really looking for a way to do a living legacy. And about the same time, actually November 2011, the UN actually declared that the population in the world had just surpassed 7 billion people. So back then, the whole idea, the concept of 2050, so we keep hearing 2050, 10 billion people. And 10 billion people right now, there's actually 800 million people that aren't getting proper food today. And we've got 3 billion more people. So the problem actually was pretty easy to determine, which is how are we going to feed a hungry planet? But that was the starting point. And the starting point from there, when you start thinking about the target group that we're talking about, 18 to 25, well, in 2050, they're going to be in their 50s. So they're actually, their children are going to be also on the planet. And it, you know, it was interesting that I brought that up because, I mean, you're always thinking of the present. And the future actually is going to be the students that are here, the delegates here today, they're the ones that are going to have to live with the problems. So why not them get out there and start thinking about how are we going to solve it? And it's complex. I mean, there's not one solution. I think I heard somebody say this morning, you know, if you're looking for a silver bullet, it ain't going to be there. But there are lots of small things that can happen.
Well, one of those small things that you were able to kind of dream up was this Youth Ag Summit. And take me through the three ideas that you implemented into three actions at the very beginning of the summit, right, when you were just youth in Canada.
Yeah. So we actually stole the idea from the mayor of Calgary, Naheed Ninchi. And one of the first things he did when he came in as mayor was he said to all Calgarians, if each of us do three things to make this a better city, we will make it a better city. And that multiple action. Here, we've had two Youth Ag Summits already. We've had over 100 delegates in each one. So, and today, we will have close to over 1,000 possible things. So, my three things. One was doing a post-summit. So we had the outcomes that came out of the 2013 to implement some of those. So we actually put together a committee. The second thing that I had was one that's close to home in the sense of food waste in the household. There was a recent research that was done in Canada that said 47% of households have food waste. And that's pretty high. What we implemented in our house was exactly that, was how do we reduce food waste in the house? So we started actually shopping more often. the big shop. We still do the big shop, but we don't do the big shop for all the produce, things that can go bad easily. And what we do is we do it on a regular basis. So every morning, you know, my wife will say, okay, who's going to be home for dinner? And then we'll figure out what the menu is going to be for that day, and we buy those ingredients for that day. And then the third one that I had, which I call my hairy audacious thing, was to ensure that the Youth Ag Summit reoccurred. And while I go back to 2013, that was a big uphill struggle. I knew my colleagues in Australia were eager to actually take it on, but we did actually have to get global support, and we did. I look back now and go, wow, this is the third one that's coming up. I've already got delegates saying, so where's the next one? Where's it going to be? We got there. So you can do big things and you can do little things, and they all have impact.
Well, that's leading us up to 2017. We're in Belgium. This week's focus is on the UN Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs, and they're going to be talking about them all week, then presenting projects, their Thrive projects for change. Talk about Bayer's commitment to that and what they will have the opportunity to fund the top three projects.
Not only are they going to have the opportunity to pitch to each other, but yes, having some funding actually to support them to make it happen. And as Liam Condon said this morning, is those ideas, if they're good enough, will be actually built into our sustainability plans as well. So as an organization, and you start thinking of an organization of 120 countries, that is a huge opportunity to leverage something like this. But yeah, there's 3,000 €3,000 for the third, 5,000 euros for the second, and 10,000 for the first. But not only do you get just funding, but they also get the opportunity to learn. So the first group will be able to go to Europe and actually get some training, some coaching as well from our organization, and we'll actually be able to present their project as well to senior management.
What's fascinating to me and what is the most important thing is we're just starting the conversations this week, but you guys are helping them implement it throughout the future. And it's not just about educating minds today. It's getting those minds thinking so that they can take this and go home and implement them in their home countries, in their own homes. What's your final thoughts? What's the biggest thing you want these youth delegates to go home with this week?
Connections. I think, again, Liam mentioned it is all about relationships. And we do measure our success in our relationships. And we've got 49 countries here. And 100 delegates from those 49 countries. As I said earlier, you've now got 48 places to visit, and you got a place to sleep. And they will take advantage of that. But these are connections that they will have for the rest of their life. And as they go through their careers and their jobs, they will come into roadblocks and they will come into barriers, and they can actually tap into this group and get perspectives from other parts of the world and other ideas as well. And you can't buy this.
Absolutely right. Derek, thank you for sharing your passion for the industry. I can tell as you're speaking to you that you truly are passionate about these ideas and the future and the youth in attendance here. Once again, here in Brussels, Belgium at the 2017 Youth Ag Summit, I'm Jamie Johansson.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers. But these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
This is Farm City News Day. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
And now another episode of One Soil to Live.
I just can't let you keep treating it like dirt, Claude.
Well, you know I don't mean to, Samantha. It's just I...
It's just what? You don't know it's alive?
Well, I...
Well, it is alive. And if you want to get the most out of it, you'll follow these four principles to keep it healthy and functioning.
All right, Samantha. I'm listening.
First, keep it covered and keep living roots in it throughout the year with diverse plants and rotations. And finally, disturb it as little as possible.
And if I do as you say, Samantha?
If you do, Claude, I have a feeling it'll be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
There's an amazing amount of life in healthy soil. More importantly, that life can help make our nation's farms more productive, profitable, and resilient. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air. Your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills. Our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Wrapping up your agriculture news for today, free trade means market opportunity for agriculture. Michael Clements joins us with more.
Free trade is vital to the development of new markets for farmers' products. Developing these markets starts with sound trade policy between trading partners. In the final installment of the U.S. Grains Council's Trade Focus series, we learn how market development creates trade. Tom Slade is president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. He explains how market development works.
It's a process by which you look at strategically where you have opportunity, and then you implement activities and strategies to develop that opportunity into a market, take it from an infant market to a real market and make that market grow over time, something the council's done quite well since our inception back in 1960.
He says market development should be looked at as a three-pronged process.
Trade policy work to make sure you have the market access, trade servicing work or customer servicing work in terms of educating customers how to buy from the United States, and then what we call capacity building or technical transfer programs that instruct them on the types of things, types of changes they can make in their enterprises, utilizing, in our case, high-efficiency diets to get better returns for their businesses, and that actually helps them and helps you because you're creating a market for your product.
Market development brings trade opportunities for U.S. producers. Slate says market development work by the U.S. Grains Council helps create and build new and existing trade relationships.
One of the best examples I've ever looked at is Taiwan and even Korea to the same extent, where whereby investment in working with different livestock industry sectors, you know, creates modern swine industry, for instance, in Taiwan, that over time transforms the whole swine industry from a backyard industry into a modern productive industry, and then in turn creates an excellent market and loyal market, I should say, for U.S. corn. So it is that type of process, you know, again, take a look strategically, investing in long-term market development, and it pays off in a good way.
Market development depends on trade policy. Slate says to develop markets, you must first be able to access those markets.
Without market access in terms of tariff access or non-tariff trade barriers being broken down and removed, you have to have that market access to allow your products to compete in a marketplace. And so trade policy creates that market access whereby you can go in and develop the market for the product.
Farmers can and do help develop new markets for their products. Slate says those investments pay off.
The world belongs to those who show up. You have to have that market presence. Investment in their checkoff programs allows us to have that presence, allows us to qualify for matching programs from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Foreign Agricultural Service, the Market Access Program, and the Foreign Market Development Program. That public-private investment allows U.S. producers to have that presence in a marketplace over time, and that creates their markets for not only today but for the future.
Learn more about market development online at www.grains.org. Michael Clements reporting.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.